Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run Through. I'm Chloe Mal, and today I am joined by some very important fashion residents of One World Trade Center. Laia Garcia Furtado.
Hello.
Jose Criales Unzueta.
Good morning.
Laird Borelli Pearson. It's a really three-name crew here.
We love yeah. a hyphen.
And I will note that, sadly, my Valentine Choma is not joining us this morning because she is currently on a transatlantic flight back to London.
Heartbreak.
Boo.
Too sad, but instead I have the amazing Vogue Runway team to also be my Valentines instead.
Exactly.
Three for the price of one. It is Wednesday afternoon. We are at the tail end of Fashion Week. Now, did anything happen last night?
Girl.
Listen.
Okay, so like the streets were saying, and when I say the streets, I mean everyone. It's giving publicists, street style photographers,
everyone.
Jealous publicists who were not working on the show. Like, the girls were all over the place. And someone just says, I think Beyoncé and Solange are going to the Loire show. And when you think Beyoncé is going, you're like, girl.
I was like, no.
You know, we were all like, yeah, this
is well, let's sure. also remind people when and where the Loire show is.
Yes.
This is so, not Midtown at 4 p.m.
Exactly. This is Bushwick. It's like 154 Scott. It's a new members-only club, but there's, like, a big venue there. But it's sort of, like, the middle of Bushwick, right? It's at 9 p.m., but the show starts at, like, 10. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
So we're going to set up a little bit of context. Raul Lopez, who is the founder of Loire, was also the co-founder of Hood by Air. Iconic New York City brand with Shane Oliver really helped define a very specific time in New York City fashion, in my opinion. Solange, who is a real one, as you surely know, used to and still does wear a lot of Telfar by Telfar Clemens, yeah. a lot of Hood by Air and Loire, of course. Like, she knows them. She's been around them. You know what I mean? She's one of the girls.
She's yeah. one of the girls.
Her son, Jules, is also one of the girls. You know what I mean? In the sense that, like, they are part of this community. They're part of the
okay.
culture, right?
It's authentic. It's real.
It's real. Yeah. Exactly. So, like, when we first heard about this, I was like, well, it makes sense that Solange goes because I'm sure Jules is walking the show. But I really didn't believe the Beyoncé of it all because I was like, well, she just announced Renaissance Act 2 at the Super Bowl. Like, I don't think her first public appearance is going to be in New York during Fashion Week at this 9 p.m. show. You know, it just kind of felt a little yeah. far-fetched. But it was a true, like, Knowles family affair last night at the Loire show.
Tina went too.
Beyoncé, Solange, Miss Tina. You
and Jules on the runway. This is what
happened.
Last season, they started doing two entrances for the Loire show. One that's general admission and one that's like a VVIP. Because of our job titles, we're very lucky to be able to use said entrance. And as I'm like approaching the entrance, someone goes, stop. That was my masculine voice. And I'm like, what's happening? And he goes like, you can't use this entrance. I was like, but I can. And he was like, well, not right now. So then a door opens and all I see is a cowboy hat and a bleach blonde ponytail.
Oh, my
and
God.
And I was like, the rumors are actually true.
There is a picture, by the way, of Beyoncé yes. like entering and Jose
and
in,
I'm
the
in the back.
Just like mouth agape.
Mind you, dear listener, I am dressed like a traffic cone. I am in head to toe orange and red. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, it was day yesterday, so we
okay,
were
I was
for
in
the
calzadas key.
It was very SMR, too.
Thank you. It was a lot of swishing. I'm like, I'm gagged. She walks in. I text the group chat, like the Vogue Runway group chat. And I'm like, y'all, Beyoncé is actually here. No one believes
we're
me.
We're like, are you sure?
And then Solange walks in, sits next to Christopher Joan Rogers.
Love.
Gorgeous, wearing Loire. Christopher is gagged.
Not sitting next to each other?
No.
It made sense because Solange, remember Solange is low-key.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beyoncé's outfit, not low-key.
And honestly, I don't know that a lot of people actually clocked that she was there.
Yeah.
That Solange
wow.
was there.
And also, like, Solange is, like, around people she knows.
Dare I ask, did we care about the actual show?
That's what I was going to say. On top of everything else,
yes.
the clothes
were so good.
It was, like, clothes. Capital C, space, capital L, space, yeah. capital O, space, like, it was like monumental.
Ah, love this.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. His whole show was about the metrosexual and the return of the metrosexual. It's almost like it's a whole thesis. He went to his like anthropology tease. It was really fun. You can read like about it in the review because it is actually like a big thing. But I do think that it's what I love about Rule is like he's asking interesting, important questions about our culture, right? Like about queer culture, about American culture, internet culture, masculinity. And that I love a show that makes me think.
I mean, I will say I encourage everyone to go back and listen to Choma's amazing tour of Raul's studio with him, which was actually a full year ago. It was last for last fashion, February Fashion Week. And I feel like you get such a sense of who he is.
Wait, I do have to bring something up that may be controversial.
Uh-oh.
Chloe Ma had a starring role at a New York Fashion Week show.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I was there, so I will say...
You weren't just there. In fact...
It was like, kind of my fault.
Let me set the scene.
Yeah, please, by all
Jose
means.
Jose and I went to a food court next door with Choma and Mark Ritucci before on our way from Willie... to Tommy Hilfiger, and everyone...
This is from Greenpoint to Grand Central Station, mind
you. And I was like, oh, yeah, come to this food court. I go here all the time, taking Artie after swim camp. And they're like, how did you discover this place? So we all had tacos, and everyone chose their own adventure. And then we rushed into Tommy, and Jose scooted into a banquette. I scooted next to him. Jean-Baptiste was the surprise performer at Tommy. I am convinced that he had a plan to dance with Anna Wintour.
I agree. And who was that next to you?
Who was in the bunkhead like right next to me. And I think that he read the room correctly from her body language that was a no.
He just kind of like approaches, you know, the Vogue section, reads the room, turns his eyes to the person next to Anna, and it is Miss Chloe Ma. Grabs Chloe by the hands, who, by the way, Chloe is the soldier you want next to you in a battle. She took it like it's... Champ stood up, danced with him for a minute, sat back down. Her face matched her beautiful red sweater.
I just felt myself red.
It was legendary, I will say. This is also the first night of New York Fashion Week.
It really kicked it off.
It really kicked it off. Like, it just really set the stage.
So from Chloe to Beyonce.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
You know, exactly.
From Chloe to Beyonce.
We really like to bookend it.
I am a sucker for... a big pageant at Fashion Week. And, like, Tommy really brought it. He took over the Oyster Bar at Grand Central Station.
Glamour.
Which was so glamorous. It was such a good idea because it's such a beautiful space.
But can we talk about the clothes? Because they were amazing.
Yeah. Some amazing pleated skirts. The proportions felt fresh. I think it's also, like, the Oyster. Like, you know, it was a combination of a lot of things that makes a really good show. His goal, he was like, I just want this to feel like a New York Minute.
Yeah.
And it was very that. It felt so. It was a New York moment, right? And it's the same thing with Luar. Like, Luar was such a New York moment where you're just kind of like...
Different moment.
But exactly.
I think this Fashion Week was a lot about New York, too. I mean, the locations and things really were telling a story about where we live.
All right. Now I want to know favorite moments of the week from the whole team here.
Willy Chavarria, one of our favorites, who kicked off the week. At first, he was going to do a movie instead of a show, and he directed this beautiful film that really captured, you know, the essence of what the Willy vibe is, also showed the clothes really beautifully. Like, it started sort of very, you know, he's like, the world is on fire right now, and the film sort of presented that, but then at the end, it was about how, you know, through community, you can sort of live through anything. And at the end, there were all of these models who are, you know, a mix of models and his cast of friends. Everyone's wearing, like, the latest collection and dancing. And if the show had been just that, we would have been, like, bummed out but happy. But then the show, you know, we got to see all the models. And it was also just really, really electrifying. And something happened at that show that I've never seen where at the end of the show, all of the models set themselves up in a tableau at the back of the runway, and everybody, you know, everybody applauded, blah, blah, blah. The models walked away and everybody just stood there.
Like, it's true.
Like waiting for an encore.
I know.
Like, when have you ever seen that happen? And then people applauded again. And then, like, the show ended. To me,
there
that was something
like this
really
moment
special.
Of breathlessness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys mentioned a lot of the moments I loved. I about. I loved Form.
Form is so good.
Form was so good. It was just sort of in, you know, one of the sad warehouses in the 30s. Yeah. But they just, it was, it felt like it had a point of view. It was mm-hmm. chic. There were these weird knit swim camps. The brilliant Max Ortega styled it.
Yes.
And just these sort of, the pleating was perfect. Like, they were all things you'd want to wear, but felt quite directional.
I also felt, like, weightless. Yes. They were, like, very sculptural clothes.
As if you were swimming.
Exactly.
I went to Anna Sui just for fun. I didn't have to review. I mean, have to, but I didn't have the privilege of reviewing. But that never happens. But, you know, it really made my dreams come true because I'm such a paperholic and book fiend. And I'd never been to the private – or the – Strand's private book or antiquarian.
So fabulous. The Strand bookstore, as everyone knows, is an iconic New York landmark. One of its famously 8 miles of books. But they have this extremely special room on the second floor that they sometimes hold events in. That's the rare books room. And there are just such special gems there. And I thought that was such a brilliant place to have a show, especially that was referencing so much literature in the clothes.
It was so nice. Anna's not a showy person. Mm-hmm. It was a great show. It was a fantastic show. And with references to some of her early 90s work. Marc Jacobs was there. Victoria Bartlett was there. It was a New York moment. It was legends, but it was also people coming together for someone that they really liked.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually jealous. I think two shows I would have liked to go to this season. One of them is the Anna Sui show, but just because it looked so fun. And Joseph Altuzarra celebrated his 15th anniversary. It's 15 years of Altuzarra, which is really crazy. He hosted like a double feature, two very intimate shows, one for press, one and friends, and one for buyers. There were tiny shows in his office building, but I heard it was beautiful. I saw the photos. It looked really, really
stunning. That was one of my top moments.
Yeah.
Like, I don't travel to Paris, so I don't have that familiarity, but to me, it felt like a real, like, French salon mm-hmm. experience. It was extremely intimate. And it also, it wasn't like a pay-to-play front row thing. Zadie Smith was in the front row in, like, ballet pink satin Altuzarra separates, just sort of slumped reading the Ibsen plays that were given to everyone at their seat. And then adorable Emma, 4-year-old daughter of Joseph and Seth, was in the front row in a matching outfit as Joseph. We love a daddy me look.
Yes.
Sometimes I feel like people do a show where they're just pulling from past seasons and it feels uncreative in a way, but this felt very referential in a new, fresh way.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm also very excited about, we're recording this on Wednesday. The last show of New York Fashion Week is Thom Browne, which is this afternoon. I love the Thom shows, but this season for Gilded Age fans, aka Laia.
Me.
Carrie Coon, who plays Bertha Russell.
Oh, is, yes, I'm so excited.
Is doing a voiceover and narrating the show, but the voiceover she's doing is of The Raven. So,
very literary season.
So yeah. Very, the girls
New York
are reading.
Loves to read.
The girls are reading.
Reading is fundamental.
Well, book adjacent.
Exactly. Book adjacent, right? book styling, as they would call it. Thom loves Edgar Allan Poe. He sort of like referenced him in the past before. But this morning, because I did a mini interview with Carrie about it, this morning I realized something insane. Like, it's a funny coincidence. So Thom and his partner Andrew Bolton from the Met live on Sodom Place in this red brick, gorgeous, stunning house. Yes.
Indescribable.
Exactly. That house was built for Anne Vanderbilt.
Ah.
Anne Vanderbilt was the second wife of William Kissam Vanderbilt, whose first wife was Alva Vanderbilt, a.k.a. Bertha Russell in The Gilded Age.
Oh, my
God. That's what I was saying.
A.k.a. Carrie Coon. Y'all, I gagged myself on the train.
Miss Marple.
I told you this when we were talking about this.
There you go. I didn't even know.
We are kicking off a new series, a Shark Week, if you will, All the Women We Want to Wear. And today we are talking about Mrs. Prada. The March issue is out this week, and it was a big Fashion Week drop with Mrs. Prada on the cover, a spectacular portrait and story. I want to know what you thought about the cover. I mean, this is a very en vogue cover. This is a big departure. Usually it's, as everyone knows, a celebrity. It's a splashy moment. This is quite elegant and quiet in some ways. No?
I loved it.
Me too.
From the moment that I found out that she was going to be on the cover, I couldn't believe it. I'm just going to say, I was like, what? No way. And I just think she looks gorgeous.
I love that it's outside, but in a different way, because there are outside covers, but the outside usually acts as like a background. And here it's like situational. And if you really want to stretch it, because she's in profile, it reminds me a little bit about, you know, Renaissance portraits.
No, that's a good point, actually. Like, it's rare that a cover photo is so context-based, and you really have a sense of Mrs. Prada's world, which often it's a studio, it's a backdrop, it's very staged. And this, as ever with her, and I think one of the many reasons we love her, is she feels so authentic and so true to who she is.
And so Italian.
And so Italian, and that really came through. What a coup to pull this off. It was photographed by Steph Mitchell in Venice, styled by Alex Harrington. Mrs. Prada is obviously wearing Prada. Mrs. Prada is famously quite interior and does not give a lot to press, which is part of her charm. But I thought that Wendell Stevenson, who is used to going across enemy lines and war zones, really got great material from Mrs. Prada and wrote this very compelling world-building piece. Laya, I loved your interview with Wendell, but my jaw dropped when you told me that there's quite an interesting early career for Mrs. Prada.
So she, you know, she studied political science in school, but she also studied to be a mime. But it's not the Marcel mime. you can't think of Mrs. Prada in white face and a striped shirt inside a box. I have looked into this.
God, how much I would like to.
I mean, it was what they call mime at the time. It was much more, I would say, like modern dance.
And we'll be back in just a moment, all about Mrs. Prada.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Hello, Wendell.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us today to talk about your Miuccia Prada cover story.
I'm very happy to be here.
Let's start at the beginning, I guess. What was it like meeting her the first time?
It was a little bit scary. It was a little bit nerve-wracking. I had previously been reporting from Israel, so I'd gone almost straight from the West Bank to Venice. I was a little bit fish out of water in another water, and I was a little bit nervous.
Usually you cover sort of war zones, you're more of a political writer. how did you prep for this interview?
No, I did as much prep as I could, which is to read, you know, as many articles about her, as many profiles, interviews that I could find. There's quite a lot out there. She's been at the top of her game and a prolific designer for a long time. So there were decades of these. So I did that. And I also watched a fair amount of YouTube videos of, interestingly, there's a subgenre which Vogue readers will know much better than I, of fashion critiques and fashion video bloggers out there, who some of whom are really interesting and smart and had really interesting and smart things to say about her and her designs and the intellectual heft and weight and origins behind them. But, you know, it was a bit daunting, not least because you can see a sort of trend running through all of her interviews and the profiles and stories about her, that she's fairly reticent in public. These sort of things that you're looking for, the meat and drink and the details and the anecdotes, you know, that make a profile come alive, you know, she's much more reticent about. So I was cognizant of that, and that made the challenge greater.
So you first met in Venice. Mm-hmm. Can you describe a little bit, you know, the setting, the mood? What was the vibe for that first meeting?
I was lucky enough to sit in or observe a little bit of her photo shoot for the cover, which took place at the Prada Palazzo on the Grand Canal in Venice. It was November. It was a kind of grey day, but all the more atmospheric for it. And it was a very chill vibe. That was, I think, the thing that impressed me first, was that she was quite at ease, quite comfortable, professional, relaxed.
Was there anything surprising about that first sort of meeting or conversation with her?
After she did the photo shoot, several of us sat down for lunch, a late lunch, and she was very warm and chatty and served everybody sort of Italian mama style. And I think what really impressed me was at the end, you know, people had to go off and do their things. And she, you know, helped one or two of us clear the plates from the table to the side. It was helpful and natural and reasonable. And I got up and helped to clear too. And she and her publicist, who's very nice, said, no, you're a guest. You know, you don't have to do that. I said, no, let me chip in, Mrs. Prada. There's a sort of warmth and a graciousness, and she has a regal bearing, but that's not how she behaves.
You went to her house?
On the second meeting, I did, which I think was a great honor. She lives in a beautiful apartment building, but I would say it's grand, but it's very classical Milanese bourgeois apartment building on a main road in Milan. You'd walk past it, it looks like many others, but she was in fact born in that house, and her family, many of her family members still live there. So you walk in and it is about as sort of beautiful and well-appointed and sumptuous and comfortable and interesting as you would imagine Miuccia Prada's apartment to be. You know, the walls are covered in art, you know, you can only guess at half of them. The other half you recognize. There's it's wonderful velvet sofas in jewel tones and this really cool black shag pile rug in front of a fire. And it's lined in huge bookshelves. And that's what, you know, really struck me, was the number of books that were around and in piles, in heavy piles of art books and books of photography and artists, as well as novels and treatises and essays. And I mean, it's absolutely myriad. Her intellectual life is really rich, really varied, and she reads a ton.
I feel like there is a few things that people love about, I call it like Miuccia lore, and it's basically that she was a member of the Italian Communist Party before she took over Prada, and that she marched in Saint Laurent famously. How do you think, do you think that political manifests in her clothes and what she does?
She talked, and I make reference to it in the article, constantly about being useful, about being meaningful, and for her designs to be that too. She talked about wanting to make people feel better as they go about their lives and inhabit themselves and find themselves and express themselves, that it wasn't about costuming people so much as it was about giving them a way to feel more comfortable in the world. And I think that clearly, you know, her feminism, she was a member of an Italian feminist league and marched for women's rights. And there's a certain sort of feminist streak that runs through her work, which is, I think, about comfort, practicality. And when, you know, but she also has whimsy and humor and flights of, you know, pink and tweel and fantasy too, which is also part of being a woman and expressing yourself. But she did say to me, you know, I don't like to do the sexy, bias cut, obvious stuff.
I loved in the article how you juxtaposed, you know, you're like, she doesn't like the word luxury. She loves the word useful. And then I was reading something else that she said. She was like, luxury is like walking to the countryside, or luxury is doing this. Like, she just hates luxury. And I love that usefulness is so much, because usefulness can mean so many things and utilitarian can mean so many things. And I feel like I'd never necessarily sort of put those things together as they relate to her political nature, which was very cool too.
Well, I think that, you know, she's the face and at the helm and running and designing for a huge global brand. She cannot be explicitly political in her views. She cannot explicitly have views in public. But I think that you can see a lot of the expression of that coming out in the exhibitions and shows that she encourages the Fondazione Prada to put on. While I was there, I had the great good fortune to be given a tour of the latest exhibition on climate change. And so you can see that she wants to engage with the great issues of the day. And she also wants to be not just to illustrate or to show them through art, but to use these as a springboard for education, for discussion. So the foundation in Milan has concerts, a cinema, gives talks and has panel discussions.
It seems that she is extremely involved with everything, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes.
I was quite surprised. I mean, she's 75 years old, but she's not stepping back. She's not recusing herself. She's not taking a break or lessening the load and stuff. But it also comes, I think, and it's part of why Prada has been so successful, is that, you know, they're really paying attention to what goes on and in, you know, in the stores or online, or the way to do fashion shows, or the way to do all sorts of things. It's a very personal imprimatur, and that's what gives it a, you know, an authenticity and an integrity.
What do you make of the bringing on Raf Simons to co-design the main collection?
Well, I mean, it seems to be a completely genius move. You know, clearly, you know, she's 75, she's getting on a little bit. And you can see that she and her husband, who've been at the helm for decades now, are seriously, you know, putting a very intelligent and careful succession plan in place. So Raf Simons has come on. They seem to both enjoy designing together, enjoy the collaboration. I talked to Raf Simons, and he was equally nice and engaging and intelligent and thoughtful as Mrs. Prada, and also I think comes from a quite an intellectual and thoughtful background, and is also very interested in art, and that's a big part of his life and inspiration. I know that Mrs. Prada likes to collaborate. She likes to bounce ideas off people. And I know that when I talked to Raf Simons, for example, he said that, you know, he agreed to do it, you know, a huge heavyweight A-list designer being in equal partnership and collaboration with another on a brand is not a usual state of affairs. But he was very happy. He seemed to be happy to do it because he knew Mrs. Prada and her husband from before. He felt at ease with them and trusted them.
Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty.
On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier,
and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru, and you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper.
Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money.
Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.
So her son Lorenzo recently had a daughter. So now Miuccia is a grandmother, which I feel like, I don't think I knew about that until I read the profile. And I love that, she's thinking and considering like all of the things that she has to teach this little girl.
Well, there is this sort of great pedagogy. So there's this great desire to learn and to understand things better and to keep learning and discovering, for her granddaughter to teach and to learn from her equally. And she worried, you know, I have to learn all about, you know, what's happening now in education. It's all so different, right? So she was going, as much as she wanted to teach her and to show her the world, she wanted to learn how to do it well.
And I have to ask, did you stress about what you were going to wear when meeting her? Or do you have would you abide by your sort of standard reporting uniform?
Well, like I say, I'd been in Israel reporting beforehand when I got asked to do this. So I did not have time to go home and get the meet Mrs. Prada outfit. So I was really slightly reduced to one decent raincoat and a pair of decent trousers and a sweater and my Bluntstone war boots.
Sounds very utilitarian and useful. And I feel
that's what I wore. And actually, I think it was fine. It was a sort of, you know, perfectly smart but not too smart, you know, urban uniform. And I noticed actually that people around her in her team, you know, were wearing much the same, you know, nice pair of trousers and a sweater kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I breathed a minor sigh of relief that I had.
And then I wanted to know just personally, when you were looking through all of her collections, do you have a favorite Prada collection?
I'm old enough that I remember when Prada first started. And I remember in the early 90s buying a lot of Prada. And I have still several pairs of Prada shoes that come out not infrequently. I have a pair of red velvet platform sandals.
I know exactly which ones you're talking about. Yeah.
That are still spectacular at almost, you know, and I think I wore them to my brother's wedding, 20 years after I bought them. And there are a few items like that that I still have.
That's really good. Those platforms, I have been looking for them. I haven't yet found them in my size, but almost everything else from the 90s that I've wanted, I've been able to find slowly. I'm building my little archive. After meeting with her, why do you think she is so important in the industry and to the industry?
I'm not a fashion reporter, so you guys may know better, but I'm not aware really of another designer who has in a single lifetime, you know, created a brand of such sustained influence that continues to grow and to globally in terms of sales, but also continues to grow in terms of influence and has become a sort of touchstone and a standard and an exemplar. There's an originality, a drive to do better. She's a perfectionist. She's never quite satisfied. She said to me a couple of times, it's really hard to have a really good idea. You know, this is not easy. You know, it happens once or twice a year. And that's what she's constantly striving for.
Another quote from the article that was really interesting was when she says that every single morning I have to decide if I'm a 15-year-old girl or an old lady near to death. Which, especially with the insane success that Miu Miu has had in the last, like, three seasons, where it really is, you know, this is how the 15, 18, 20-year-old, the youth is dressing. Really interesting.
I think that's all of us. And you're young, and I'm not as old as Mrs. Prada, but I'm older than you. And what happens is that you have this kind of weird thing as you get older, as you sort of, you accrue a bit of wisdom, and that's quite nice, and you accrue experience, and that's sort of helpful, and stories get longer and more convoluted, which if you're a writer, you like that. But you still feel, you know, the same often, you know, insecurities or doubts or idiocy, you know, sort of childish things that you did when you're 13, and you sometimes think, you know, how old am I? Why am I still, you know, feeling like this or doing this or whatever it is? And I think it's part of her, as she said, you know, I think we are all many characters. You know, sometimes we're mature and sometimes we're immature, and sometimes we do considered things and sometimes we don't want to be rational.
Yeah, and I guess that's what makes her so great, that she minds and explores all of the feelings of all these different characters, whether it's at Prada or at Miu Miu. All right, Wendell, well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat about your super great Prada profile that's in the new issue of Vogue.
Thank you for having me to talk about it. It was a really fun, interesting, fascinating challenge to write.
That's it for today's episode. See you tomorrow for Mrs. Beckham herself.
Posh Spies.
And
period.
Sorry, I had to.
Yeah, it was great. All right. The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast. The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns, with engineering from Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and James Yost. It is mixed by Mike Kutchman. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then, I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.